Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. All right, let me ask you something. How much money have you spent on fitness equipment in, say, the last 3 years? And this could be for your gym. It also could be for the equipment that you bought for a client's home gym setup that you take and travel with you with remote clients that you work with. It could be the gear that you recommended that they went and purchased and you happen to help them out with some stuff to be able to use for your own clients. It could be even stuff that you put in your own facility as well because you thought it would help level up your training environment. And here's even a follow-up question, and this is one that you can kind of sit and think on as well, is how much of that purchase decision was based on evidence and that equipment would actually drive better outcomes for your clients versus how much of it was actually based on marketing, aesthetic appeal, maybe brand reputation, or maybe we even saw popular coaches using on Instagram or TikTok. And I'm going to guess that that split is not really quite as clean as you think it might actually would want it to be. And that's not necessarily a knock on us as coaches or trainers. It's a knock on the industry that has done a really good job of conflating expensive with effective and then high tech with high performance. Welcome back to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. And today we're going to do an episode that's going to be practical, tactical, and honestly, probably overdue, something that I probably have made, needed to make content on as a gym owner. I think I talk to several people quite frequently about their thought process of what they should buy for their home gym or their own gym or for personal training. And so I'm going to consolidate this all into nice one clean episode here for you today. So we're going to build the equipment buying guide that you've probably not really got. You're going to get it from somebody that's actually had to purchase equipment, you know, outfit my own facility. I've been involved in personal training for quite some time at this point. So I've used a lot of the high-end stuff. I've used, you know, secondhand stuff. I can give you some really good quality feedback here. And we're going to talk about what's actually important from the training outcome side, maybe even use some research here to draw some lines between necessity and luxury, and then how you can tier your purchases so that every dollar that you're spending either directly serves your client or grows your business. And we're going to expose some of the marketing narratives that have been quietly draining gym owners and trainers for decades at this point. And so this episode is for the strength coach, personal trainer building out a new space. It could be for the personal trainer that's trying to help their clients set up their home gym on a tight budget. It could be for somebody outfitting their own garage gym as well. It's for the gym owner who just got a quote, maybe even from an expensive company, is wondering whether the upsell is actually worth it. And honestly, it's for anyone who's ever looked at their own equipment inventory as well and wondered if they made the right calls. Maybe they can even reduce, get rid of some stuff, and maybe even replace it with something that's more effective. So this could be something that you can take a lot of good take-homes with. So if you want to take notes, I think this would be a really good episode to be able to do that. And so let's start by understanding the landscape here that we're navigating, because I do think it's important to have the context behind the decisions that we're going to talk about here today in this episode. And so the global fitness equipment market was valued at approximately $14.7 billion back in 2022, and it's projected to exceed $22 billion by 2030, according to Grandview Research. And that is a massive growing industry. Just the fitness industry in whole is growing, and with significant marketing resources behind all of this as well. And here's what the marketing resources are all pointed at, is that convincing you and or your clients that better results come from better equipment. And that is a fundamental lie at the end of the day. And it gets repeated so often in so many forms that most of us have internalized this as common sense. And so let me break down how this actually works, because I think once you actually see this, you're not going to be able to unsee it. And so vector one here that we're going to talk about is going to be the outcome conflation here. And what This is where a piece of equipment is shown being used by elite athletes or aesthetically exceptional individuals. You know, they're shredded, don't have much clothes on, and the obviously implication there. And it's always implied and never stated that the equipment is contributing to those results. And so you've probably seen this hundreds of times if you see any kind of marketing, that a cable machine ad showing, say, a shredded lifter or a bodybuilder using it, a conditioning platform brand sponsored by D1 programs, or there's their facilities outfitted, these big D1 programs. But the equipment did not build those athletes, right? So years of intelligent training are what built those athletes, as well as genetics. And then the equipment is really incidental at the end of the day. Vector two is going to be the technology side and the theatrics of it. And this is the introduction of different features. So having different digital displays, AI-driven resistance and derivatives to be able to help you with your program design, biofeedback integration, custom programming software, right? That gives the appearance of sophistication without really any kind of true evidence that those features produce any kind of meaningful better outcomes than a barbell and a well-designed training program at the end of the day. And a 2021 review in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research examining technology integrated resistance training found that no statistically significant difference in strength and hypertrophy outcomes compared to just traditional free weight training over 12 and 24 week training periods when volume and intensity were equated for. So think about that the next time that there's a $15,000 smart kind of cable system that shows up in, you know, on social media, or you happen to see it in a nice big training facility, something maybe they're trying to push or something that they're claiming is pretty unique. And then factor number three is going to be the professional identity leverage side of things. And this one is subtle, and it hits strength and conditioning coaches really hard. The equipment companies have learned that fitness professionals tie their professional identity to their training environment. And so a well-equipped facility signals competence. A sparse one signals more amateurism. And so they sell you on the idea that your credibility is partially housed in your equipment that you have, which means that every upgrade is really an investment in your professional brand, not just training outcomes. And that's a very clever reframing that they do, and it's one worth asking questions about, which we are going to do here today. And so the research, when we actually dig down deep into this, paints a very different picture about what drives actual training outcomes. So a landmark meta-analysis published in Sports Medicine examining resistance training adaptations across different training environments found that the primary drivers of strength and hypertrophy adaptation are progressive overload, your volume load, proximity to failure, movement specificity, and your overall recovery. Equipment type ranked nowhere in the top area and determinants of when those variables were controlled for. And so what that tells us practically is that the constraint is almost never the equipment at the end of the day. The constraint is the quality of the training program, the consistency of the execution of that program, and then obviously the coach's ability to manage those key variables, either groups or individuals or one-on-one personal training. And so, you know, as a $300 barbell and a power rack can produce the same fundamental adaptation stimuluses as, say, a $3,000 version of a similar tool. And with the caveat that the $3,000 version might have better durability, aesthetics, user experience features that serve specific populations, but the adaptation that you're probably going to get from the training is going to be the same. Now, that doesn't mean that equipment quality never matters. It definitely does. I definitely believe in the buy once, cry once type of framing here, but the threshold for good enough is much lower than the industry wants you to believe, and the premium above that threshold needs to be justified by something other than just the brand prestige itself. So now we're going to talk about this three-tier framework that I really want to work around here, and I want to give you a mental model that you can apply to literally every piece of equipment that you're ever considering purchasing, whether it's for your facility, for a home gym setup, for a garage gym setup, for your client setup, or maybe you're using it to travel, like I said, or maybe just for your own training, just because you're listening to this and you want to level up your own training. And so these are the three tiers that I have here. And the first one's going to be the non-negotiables, okay? These, to me, pretty much the piece of equipment where the removal of them meaningfully compromises your ability to deliver quality training outcomes. And they are load-bearing walls of your training environment. At the end of the day, you don't want to cut these out. You don't want to downgrade these below the functional threshold of what you actually need to get progress. And for a strength-focused facility or coach, this tier is almost universally going to include quality barbells, more on specific specs of those in just a little bit here, but sufficient plate weight to load your entire client base through their training blocks and within the training facility. Obviously a power rack, squat stand, something like that, with safety features that are going to be appropriate for your training styles, right? Depending on how you do things. A set of dumbbells spanning the range that your programming is going to require, and then some kind of station or multi-grip station that you can do pull-ups and chin-ups, usually that integrated into that squat rack that we kind of talked about. That's really honestly it. For the overwhelming majority of strength training applications, that is the environment in which every meaningful outcome your clients will ever achieve can be produced. You can live in that rack. And I did it for years in my garage training for powerlifting. I may do for a very long time with a lot of the basics. And a 2019 systematic review in the Journal of Human Kinetics found that compound free weight movements performed with proper loading and technique produced equivalent or superior outcomes to machine-based or specialty equipment for both trained and untrained populations across strength, power, and body composition markers. So when you're buying in this tier of equipment, quality does matter because durability and safety are directly going to impact your ability to not only serve clients without interruptions and issues, but quality does not require necessarily having a brand premium. And I'll get to more of those specifics here in just a little bit. Tier number two are going to be then what you can be called like your outcome enhancers or your value multipliers, okay? And so the equipment that is meaningfully expands the scope of what you can train allows you to serve additional populations or produce time efficiency gains in your programming that can benefit your clients. And these are legitimate purchases, but they're justified by the specific programming needs, not by the aspiration or peer pressure. And so things in this tier include obviously resistance bands. I think they are cost effective. They're highly versatile. They're supported by ample research for accommodating resistance and things like that, being joint friendly from a loading perspective. And with rehabilitation side, they can also be useful, and you can just tie them to a power rack and get a lot of accessory work done if you don't happen to have cable machines. So they are very high return on investment piece of equipment. And really, I kind of flirted up putting this into the tier one, but I don't think you have to have them. But I do think they are very, very nice and one of the first things I recommend for a lot of people as long as they've got the standard kind of free weight setup going on, right? Another one would be here in this group would be kettlebells. Again, not a must have, but I do think there's a lot of unique things that you can do with kettlebells, particularly getting up into the 16 to 32 kilogram range per kettlebell, ideally having a pair of them. That's going to allow you to work with a lot of beginner, intermediate, and even some advanced clients, showing that it's going to give you a lot of bang for your buck from a ballistic-based work, posterior chain development, you know, all that kind of great stuff. I also think a quality glute ham raise or some kind of way that you can set up a Noric hamstring curl if hamstring specificity and or athletic performance is something that you're really after. I think it is a good thing to be able to have in your training programs and access to as well. And we know that the research on the Noric hamstring curl for injury prevention definitely can justify this for our coaches that are working with specific athletic populations. And then I do also think that a plyo box setup for reactive development, power, jumping, all those things are another great investment in this tier. And then also a landmine attachment if it isn't already built into your rack. We use the landmine constantly in my facility. It is, again, one of the other high bang for your buck pieces of equipment that you'll get a lot from, especially if you have the ability to set up multiple stations to use with a variety of athletes, especially from a team perspective. It just fills a lot of gaps, in my opinion. And so these tier purchases should always answer this question before you decide to actually purchase them, is what specific outcome, population, or even programming gap does this piece of equipment address? And so if you can't answer that question in, you know, relatively 1 to 2 sentences in your head, I don't really think it's something that you're going to need in this tier. I think it can follow back into this third tier, being something that can be nice, but something you don't have to have. But I do will tell you that I have every single one of these pieces of equipment in my facility, and they get used every single week, usually to a very high degree. So they are very worthwhile, especially from a facility perspective. or even if you're doing some small personal training, I think there are things that you can get a lot of bang for your buck out of those. Then this third tier are going to be your, these things would be nice to have, right? They might add some comfort or maybe some convenience, but you're not going to necessarily have them. And these are pieces that can improve the experience of training. They can expand the client satisfaction. They can allow you to run a more efficient operation or training facility. And they can serve highly specific niche populations within your business. So they're not irrelevant, but they are, in my opinion, context dependent. These items are going to include specialty bars. We have all the kind of specialty bars at my facility. We use them a ton. I really do like them. I think they are very convenient. So again, this is going to be talking about convenience, but this is going to include things like your safety squat bar, your hex bar, trap bar, any kind of cambered bar, whether it be a squat or a bench bar, a Swiss bar, a multi-grip bar. These are genuinely excellent tools for specific programming goals, but none of them are necessarily foundational or must have. Now, going back to the population side, you know, I work with a lot of athletes. I work with a lot of general population clients, and shoulder health and things like that are things that we like to really consider. And also the ease of learning how to do the movement and making things well. And usually a lot of these specialty bars can make things a lot easier, a lot friendlier for specific populations. So we do know that, you know, like a good safety squat bar is going to change the game for your lower body perspective for clients that are obviously going to have upper body limitations, right? I definitely got a guy with a frozen shoulder, and you know, he's not going to be able to get his arm back to do a regular barbell. So a safety squat bar is almost a must for him if we want to do any kind of heavy bilateral loading, just to be able to get the load on him. But it is still obviously a specialized purchase. It's not something that you have to have. Now, cable machines fall here for most training environments, in my opinion, despite what equipment salespeople will actually probably try to tell you. And so they're excellent for certain isolation work and unilateral training, but they are not the foundation of results in the general programming when it comes to strength and conditioning. Now, I do use our cable machine a lot. We have two cable machines, two lat pull downs, and they get used constantly. I think there's a lot of great things from them, but I don't think they are something you have to have right from the get-go. Again, you can make use with bands. There's also the Ancor systems, which are much more cheaper and affordable, especially from a home gym perspective or a small, very small personal training studio, right? I think those are going to be a better option, but I still think a cable machine can be fantastic if you can get one, because it's really going to expand the selection of exercises that you can use with your clients. And then we can talk about cardio equipment and specifically more of conditioning platforms and things that you can use like battle ropes, sleds, and turf. You know, all these can live in tier three and get purchased when the tier one and the tier two exercise or equipment, excuse me, are all fully funded and functioning. Now, I do think that having turf is going to be context dependent, because if you make a living training athletes like I do, being able to run, jump, do athletic things, have space to move is incredibly important. And it does make it a lot easier to be able to run a facility when you have turf. And then you can add obviously the sleds for conditioning and be able to get a lot of work done there as well. But again, I don't think it's something you have to, and really you can get some sleds and push stuff outside if you really need to as well. Now, the issue is when coaches and gym owners buy from the bottom of this tier, you know, starting at tier three and try to work their way up, and then spending the budget on all the nice fancy gadgets and gizmos that, you know, aren't necessarily required before they get the big bang for your buck exercise equipment list that you really need to, again, going back to the bars, the racks, the dumbbells, the benches are going to go in them, right? Those are going to be the things that you really are going to need to get quality results. And so, you know, I've seen different training facilities are going to have a ton of different cable stations, you know, some different rowergometers. Maybe they got a Kaiser functional trader. And then, you know, they got some really kind of junky bars. Maybe they got some really, crappy crumb plates, but they could have gotten better quality plates that are going to last longer. You know, that's all going to be all over the place. And it's not necessarily a training environment that's looking at getting what the results are built around, right? It's just built on the optics of having some fancy things to make it look like a specialized training facility. Now, here I want to actually get a little bit more tactical, and I want to walk you through each major equipment category and tell you what is actually important in terms of the specifications of them, and then what the marketing is trying to sell you that maybe you don't necessarily need, and give you some real-world benchmarks of what constitutes good enough at each tier. And so the barbell obviously is going to be the single most important piece of equipment in most strength training environments and strength and conditioning facilities, and also one of the most over-marketed pieces of equipment as well. And so here's what really matters from a barbell from an outcome perspective. Having one that's got a tensile strength, that's got a minimum of 150,000 PSI for a training bar used with serious loading. I think this is the material strength threshold above which bars reliably resist permanent deformation under load. And so this is a non-negotiable spec. You want to make sure it's at least that strong. Below this, especially on the cheap imported bars, you will see flex, you're going to see whip, you're going to see long-term structural issues with them, especially if you get really strong people in there. And you don't really want that to affect the safety of the barbell, but ultimately the safety of the athlete or the client as well. Next is going to be knurling, right? You want that to be aggressive enough to provide a secure grip without necessarily shredding your hands across high rep sets or specific work. And this is subjective, right? It really depends. Everyone's going to have their own preference when it comes to their knurling. But if you're buying just general training bars, you know, the center knurling is usually a good preference point, not necessarily performance variables. Getting something in the middle ground is usually okay. And if you happen to buy one that's a little bit stronger, one that's a little bit, you know, not as aggressive, that's fine. We have a variety of different bars in our facility, and we've got a variety of different knurlings. Most people are usually going to lean towards that moderate to slightly aggressive versus the softer ones. But again, we work with more athletic and highly driven individuals. And I've never really had anybody complain about the knurling in my facility when I've ever thought about it. So don't worry about it too much. If you're buying a quality barbell, you're probably going to have the knurling take care of itself. Next, for the shaft diameter, you're going to want one that's 28 millimeters, 29 millimeters for powerlifting and just general strength training. The 28 millimeters for your Olympic weightlifting movements is going to be due to the whip requirement during performing the movement. And then obviously the females are going to have the 25 millimeter barbells respectively. So those are the things you need to kind of pay attention for there on those. And then when it comes to the bushing versus the bearing sleeves, the bearings are definitely going to spin more freely and matter significantly for the Olympic weightlifting populations. And if you're doing your cleans and your snatches and your jerks, these are definitely more important that you get bearing sleeves, in my opinion. But for general strength training outside of that, so your squats, your deadlifts, your bench press, your overhead press, right? Regular bushing bars are completely adequate and are going to get the job done, and they're generally more affordable. So you can find your power bars for your power bar movements and get your weightlifting bars for your weightlifting movements. That's ideally what you should do, right? You don't want to try to do a clean and jerk with a Texas power bar. That's going to feel absolutely terrible. Spend the money and get the bearing bar from Rogue or wherever you want to happen to get them from. And here's really the bottom line of this, is that you can buy a barbell that checks every meaningful spec for specific training outcomes. And you can usually get a well-rounded barbell for that $250 to $350 range. You can get one that's bearing. It's got the power rings and the weightlifting rings. And you can really consolidate things if you need to. But I do think if you know you're going to have stronger people and doing weightlifting stuff, I really prefer to have two separate barbells and deal with it there. But you do not necessarily need a bar that's going to be $700 just for the brand reputation or the aesthetics, the machining precision that might be out there. You don't have to have that stuff. Now, if you're specializing in like powerlifting or whatever, and you need some of those competition bars, that's one thing. But if you're just trying to train general population athletics, you're not going to necessarily need that. It's not going to do anything special for your clientele. Now, for a commercial facility seeing very high volumes of people, you know, the durability case for a premium bar might be a little bit more justifiable. But for most training contexts, in my opinion, a standard power bar from Texas Power Bar or Rogue or whatever is going to get a lot done. It's really going to do everything you need to do. Now, from a plates perspective, we can talk about calibrated bumper plates versus the rubber bumper plates versus the iron plates. And here's where I think this decision is kind of important. For general strength training and just working with clients, the iron plates are definitely going to be obviously your most cost-effective option and are perfectly appropriate, right? My facility started off with these. We did not have any kind of calibrated plates early on. Even in my garage, I traded with all these plates. They work fine, right? They're heavy. They're compact, right? They're going to load accurately enough for the general progressive overload that we need. They might be a pound off here and there, but it's really going to be pretty close. You can also find economy cast plates that can run sometimes even as low as $1 per pound. That's kind of the bottom baseline, but usually you're going to find closer to that $150 to $175 per pound buying them new. If you can even find them used from people, they're going to get the job done, especially if you're starting off early and being able to craft like a home gym or your own training facility or something like that. And then for the Olympic weightlifting, where the environment's going to have people dropping the barbells, the rubber bumper plates are for the safety aspect, obviously, and for the floor protection requirement, and to also allow the bar to disperse some of that load, you know, as you drop it. So I do think if you can get some IWF calibrated competition plates for competition environments, you 100% need to do that. The crumb bumper plates, I'm not really a big fan of, but you can get by with them if you need to, especially starting off. You can find those around like $1.75 a pound sometimes, and they're going to handle everything that you need. So just keep that in mind. That I do think also that the training plates are a great middle ground. That's what I prefer to buy. I don't have any kind of like high level of a weightlifter. So, you know, if I had more, then I would invest in more competition grade equipment for them. But I've found that the training grade plates are a nice middle ground. They're durable. They last long. You get a lot of quality work from them. You know, they're going to hold up, and they're relatively affordable when it comes to bumper plates. And so usually you're going to find people trying to upsell on the colored plates and the calibrated plates, especially from a powerlifting perspective. And again, if you work with weightlifters or powerlifters and you need the precision calibration plates from a training perspective, I think having a set or two isn't a bad thing. We have calibrated plates. Obviously, all my powerlifters usually tend to use them. I use them on occasion whenever I train. It really just depends on what rack I pick and what I'm doing and how I have my training laid out. It's not really that big of a deal to me, but you know, if I was getting ready for a meet, then I would obviously drift towards the calibrated plates, and same thing for the weightlifting. But when you're working with general population and athletes, most of them do not care. It's not going to make that big of a difference, and it's really not going to matter. You're going to be spending a lot of extra money on stuff you probably don't need. So again, context is going to be dependent there. Now, talking about the power racks, squat stands, things like that, the rack is going to be the infrastructure of your training facility almost no matter where you go. And this is the one place where I could actually argue that spending intentionally on the quality is actually justified. Not because necessarily the premium brands drive better outcomes, right? But because the rack safety, the durability, the longevity of it is going to have downstream effects on training the client safely and getting the most bang for your buck out of your rack, and depending upon what all needs to be done in that rack. So what really is going to matter is having the uprights. And I think really you should have the minimum of the 3x3 inch 11 gauge steel. I think that's the best way to go, especially if you're going to be commercial. You're going to have people come in and be able to just use your facility whenever they want. And if you're private, you might be able to get by with a 2x2, but I still think 3x3 is the way to go. And then the safety pins or the safeties that are rated at or above your heavy rejected maxes that you're going to see. So you're also going to want J-cups that are going to protect the bar finish so that the way your bars last longer. But really the functionality, you know, this is really important. It does look like it's cosmetic, but, you know, we still want it to be able to protect our bars at the end of the day. And I also think that the footprint is appropriate for your space with the bolt down capacity if your facility is going to need it. Now, I will tell you, we don't have any of our racks bolted down because we have hundreds and hundreds of pounds on them. And the Elite FTS racks that we have are strong as hell. They're durable. They hold up really, really well. They are great quality racks. You know, I've been affiliated with Elite FTS for a long time. I'm very, very impressed by all of their equipment, anything I've ever gotten from them and used. It works great. But there's obviously other companies out there that are going to meet all those standards as well. And then the brand premium beyond all these specs that we have is really going to be about the aesthetics and maybe from the country, the manufacturer, where they're coming from. So, you know, a well-built rack from just a mid-tier domestic manufacturer, anywhere around like $1,000 to $1,500, will function well for a lot of people. But you can obviously get all the way up to $2,000, $3,000, maybe $4,000 for a rack, depending upon what all you have on there with like jammer arms and things like that. There's different ways you can scale them up. Most of my Elite FEF racks are somewhere in those ranges, and they have held up very well. And you got to think they get used and abused on a daily basis. Now we're going to talk about the cardio equipment side of things. And this is where I think marketing is at its most aggressive. And the evidence for this equipment specific outcome is, in my opinion, at its weakest. And so the research on cardiovascular conditioning is clear as well, that the primary driver of aerobic adaptations is the intensity, duration, and the frequency of the effort, not the modality or the equipment brand, obviously, right? So a 2020 meta-analysis in medicine and science and sports and exercise found no significant difference in the VO2 max improvement across the treadmill, the stationary cycling, rowing, the assault bike modalities when work output was equated. And so what this means is that the best cardio equipment is the equipment that your clients will actually use consistently, that fits your space, that's going to hold up underneath the volume of usages you're going to use it, and that your programming model is going to call for. Okay, so assault bikes and rowing ergometers have earned their place in more conditioning-focused environments because of their low impact to output ratio, right? They allow for very high-intensity effort with reduced joint loading, which has very meaningful programming applications for, you know, older individuals, high training individuals, high effort individuals that are doing a lot from a sport perspective. And I think that becomes a very legitimate tier two case when we're tiering our exercises, right? But I do think having to go buy a $5,000 commercial treadmill that's got a screen and all this other stuff that's on it is not really going to be worth your time whatsoever. And it's not going to produce any kind of better cardiovascular adaptations than you're going to get from, say, a good quality assault bike for well less than $1,000. So I do think there's a conditioning equipment out there that works well. The skier, the assault bikes, and the row ergometers, right? Those, I think, are three pieces that are great. They fill everything that you need from a conditioning perspective, and they are also affordable. Now let's talk about the specialty equipment side of it. And I want to address three pieces of specialty equipment that generate a lot of buying pressure in the strength and conditioning world. And the first one is going to be the functional trainers and the cable machines. And these are amazing tools for unilateral work, rotational based patterns, and certain type of isolation applications from a, you know, doing some of your accessory work and what have you. And the evidence does support that they are valuable, they are useful, but you have to ask from the price perspective, because these things can get expensive. You can see them for $8,000 to $15,000 on very premium functional trainers, and that the brand equity that's in there is not necessarily going to be worth the quality of it, especially not the outcome security over, say, a $2,500 to $4,000 mid-tier commercial cable machine. So if you run a lot of cable-based programming or you like those exercises, I would buy a quality unit at a reasonable price point. And if you don't let the sales rep or the people convince you that you should have to buy one, right? I just think that somewhere in that $2,000 to $4,000 range, maybe up to $5,000, can definitely be something that's very useful, but you can find some really quality ones to get a lot of the work done that you need. The second one is going to be these vibration platforms. And I'm going to be really, really clear here that the evidence base for the whole body vibration as a training modality for healthy trained populations is not very good. Okay, it's a really big waste of time. So a 2022 systematic review in sports medicine found the effect sizes for vibration training on strength and power in trained individuals to be small, inconsistent, and basically no effect. And so I would not waste your time on any of that kind of stuff. It's not going to be worth it. The research doesn't justify spending the thousands of dollars. So don't worry about stuff like that. And the third one is going to be the machines now that are integrating AI into their equipment. And this is almost like the upcoming frontier of the technology side of the fitness industry. And while the machines can be impressive, the user experience is very nice. It's clean, right? It makes you feel really special. It can do a lot of cool things from a functionality perspective. But the outcome side of things in terms of the controlled research comparing the results from the AI-guided resistance training to just a coach-guided, progressive, general overload, traditional equipment, strength and conditioning program is not in support of it. So if you're trying to be a technology-forward facility or person, I really don't think the justifiable use of that equipment is quite there yet. But I think it just trying to signal that you're trying to have innovation and something special, but it's really not going to be all that great. It's not really going to be the purchase for you. I do think if you have some of those and it's for, say, at home or whatever, or you happen to be very affluent and you don't want to buy these big elaborate systems, but you can buy, you know, like these tonals or whatever on the wall. We've seen the commercials like LeBron James. Okay, maybe there's some justifiable there, but for me, I just don't think it's worth getting into those things. So I want to give you some real-world numbers here, because I think without these contexts here. I think it's just, you know, philosophy. I'm just kind of giving you some ideas and my opinions. These are just all ballpark budget guidelines for building out a good quality training environment at each level based upon the current market pricing, not MSRP, and assuming that you're buying intentionally rather than reactively. Okay. So a home gym for an individual, the tier one, so your big bang bucks if you have, you're going to find this $1,500 to $3,000 is about what you're going to need to spend to be able to get a decent quality setup going so you can do the big bang for your bucks. Then you're going to find that the tier two stuff, adding in some of the bands, maybe a glute ham raise or something like that, you might be looking $500 to $1,500 depending upon what all you choose to get. And then that tier three, you can spend $200 to $800 on some of those other stuff as you need to. Now, personal training studio, so you do one-on-one training, respectively, it's going to be $5,000 to about $12,000 is probably what you're going to need to put into it. And then $2,000 to $5,000 into those tier two things. And then $1,000 to $3,000 into the nice-to-have things if you've got the money left over. Now, if you're doing some small group, semi-private, but you're still private, right? You're not allowing people to come in and use your space. Now you're looking in more of that $15,000 to $35,000 of your tier one. You need to get several racks, several barbells, lots of plates, lots of dumbbells, you know, lots of kettlebells, things like that. Then your tier two isn't going to go in. We're going to spend about $5,000 to $15,000 filling in the gaps, again, to be able to make your programming run smoothly. And then you can spend $3,000 to $10,000 on the tier three stuff, depending upon where your budget would be. So you would want to try to maximize out, obviously, each tier one stuff as much as you can first before you start buying stuff in the other side. And the last one here is going to be like a full commercial facility or someplace like mine where it's semi-private training, but you can still get a membership. And that's going to be $50,000, usually on the low end, all the way up to $120,000 in your tier one stuff for buying all your big bang for your bucks stuff that you need to be able to actually truly operate. And then $20,000 to $50,000 again for your tier two when we start talking about kettlebells and landmines and certain machines and things like that. And then $10,000 to $40,000 for all the other things that might be nice to have, but you don't have to have. You can get some of the extra toys there. And so some notes here on these ranges is that these numbers are assuming that you're buying things new, right? The used equipment market, especially for commercial graded plates, racks, and barbells, they can cut these costs down by 30 to 50%. Without compromising, you know, the specs and the thresholds and being safe. So something that is very, very possible to do, and I think it's very worth considering if you're able to do it. So if you can find different gym liquidators or use Facebook Marketplace seriously and negotiate and find good quality stuff, then you can also make sure that you're not paying full retail for the iron plates as well. So you can save a lot of money for doing that. And that's how I actually started my garage gym, which is now also obviously morphed into Thirst. The second one is that the ratio matters more than the total here. And so if you're looking at your current facility and you've got $40,000 spent in your tier three type of equipment, but your tier one foundation is underfunded or aging out, right? You're on the lower end of it. That's a misallocation of your funds. That's probably directly hurting your client's training experience. More than likely, very rarely are you going to find that you're spending more on the must-haves, the big bang for your buck stuff. I'm not trying to repeat that here, but if you're trying to figure out how to allocate those funds, those are the things that I think are the most important to go after and where you're probably going to want to spend a little extra money, especially from the get-go. And then third is having a maintenance budget. So every equipment piece that you're buying, you should probably guess that you're going to spend about 5 to 10% of the equipment value on maintenance, repair, and replacement at some point over the couple of years. Obviously, the newer you buy, the more you're going to push that off. And it's a line item that gets ignored until you have something happen to your barbell or something happens to your rack, something happens to your cable machine, and then it becomes an emergency of trying to figure out how to get fixed and get it taken care of. It could obviously also be a liability exposure. And also clients are paying to be able to use stuff they want in working order. I think that's important. There's several gyms that just kind of let stuff go. And you know, me and Adrian do our absolute best when there is an issue to immediately address it and make sure everything's going to be okay there. Now, before I wrap this up here, I want to give you more of a quick rapid fire type of stuff of red flags, green flags that you can use when it comes to evaluating equipment purchases, either for yourself, your facility, or what have you. And here are the red flags that I came up with that you should either just walk away from the situation entirely, or you want to do some more research before you actually pull the trigger. And so the first one is going to be that if a salesperson cannot tell you very specific things like tensile strength, gauge, specific material specs of a product when you're talking to them, that should be a red flag. You want to buy from somebody that knows their equipment, what they're doing, and how it can best serve you. So making sure that you have a good relationship with somebody, I always recommend Matt Goodwin over at Elite FTS. He is the man. If you ever need strength equipment, he is who I would recommend you get in touch with, and Matt will take care of you. The next one is going to be that the primary selling point is the celebrity or an influencer endorsement with, you know, that's really trying to push this piece of equipment, right? That shouldn't be a reason why you buy anything in life, in my opinion, but that's how marketing works. But when it comes to strength and conditioning equipment, that doesn't really matter at the end of the day. You want to buy just a quality product. Who's actually in the ads or trying to promote that product should not matter very much. Another one's going to be that the company cannot point you to any kind of research or evidence for specific outcomes that they're claiming on very unique pieces of equipment, especially, but even just some of their basic stuff. So, you know, if they're trying to tout this very new machine that's supposed to do X, Y, Z or whatever, you know, we want to make sure that it has a lot of checks and balances. And if it's claiming it can do something, hopefully it's something that's got a little bit of research behind it. The next one's going to be if the price is going to include some kind of software subscription component that's going to lock you into like monthly fees or, you know, maintain the fact that it can work. I think that's also a red flag. That's, I think it's also just a long-term issue. Anyways, it's something else that's going to break that could potentially go bad. Wouldn't waste your time with it. If the warranty coverage is shorter than 5 years for structural components, for new stuff that you're buying, anything less to me is going to show that there's low confidence in the long-term durability. Again, so buying quality equipment, buy once, cry once. Usually you can get some warranties that are going to come with a lot of those things as well. Or another red flag is if like a sales rep is focusing exclusively on aesthetics, the feel, how nice it looks, right? The appeal that's going to have, rather than the performance variables for your program. Now, I will say, in this era of NIL for NCAA and strength and conditioning, one, these companies have, these schools have budgets that are just insane. They can spend money like it does not matter. And for some of this, it is important to be able to track the right athletes, but you'll still notice that all those facilities are buying the really good quality equipment that's also going to last a long time. It goes with the peel and the setup. And that's a little bit different because you're talking about, again, a school that's just got millions of dollars to throw around. So of course they can do that, right? It's just like a really rich athlete getting a Ferrari or a Lamborghini, right? Like they have the money to be able to go do that. So they don't really freaking care because the money's just going to keep coming in. If you're an actual business owner like myself or whatever, you're not probably in that seat. So don't worry so much about that. Make sure you get some quality equipment that's going to last a long time. It's going to let you do what you need to do. And then if the money comes later and you want to upgrade something a little bit fancier, that's fine. You know, my racks are still color-coded to my gym, but that's something that came with the racks anyway. That's something that Elite FTS did for the equipment, right? It wasn't anything crazy extra expensive to pay for to be able to do that. So it really just depends. Now, once you start getting like laser etching and whatever, that's when those prices really get up. So don't worry about that unless if you're obviously running a D1 program. All right, some things that I think are thumbs up or green flags, things that are going to be really great. So you're going to have verifiable specs on all of your equipment, the grade, the gauge, the PSI ratings. Those are all great things. If there's transparency or third-party testing or independent reviews from coaches, other facilities, you know, there's no sponsorship or relationship. Garage Gym Reviews does a great job, right, of reviewing everything. That's another place that you can find quality information on specific pieces of equipment. Those are all good things as well. If a manufacturer offers trial periods or demo units for you, I think this also is going to signal that they're confident in the real-world performance outcomes that you can get by using it. I think it's fantastic if you're able to do that. Not very common, but I do think that's a good sign. If there's a warranty that differentiates different structural, mechanical, and finish coverage, right? The specificity here signals that the engineering has been done well to a high degree. So I think that's also another big thumbs up. if there's other coaches that are in your network or friends or family members or people you know personally that own that piece of equipment or have used it, they train with it regularly, they've put lots of volumes of athletes and clients through it without any issues and talk highly of it, I think that's a great thing. You know, as I've mentioned, Elite FTS here a lot, and the stuff that we have bought, we've tried to buy very high quality stuff when we get things that, you know, I will be very honest with people, like, hey, these are things that I really like, and hey, these are things that I would do differently. So, you know, talk to people that you know and outsource it that way, because those are the people that are going to give you real world experience at the end of the day. And you also want to check out that the price to the specification ratio is consistent with other market comparables. So neither suspiciously cheap or dramatically expensive without differentiated specs. So you can find kind of that market average. You can find some stuff that's a little bit cheaper, some that's a little more expensive. They may have some extra bells and whistles here and there. You know, you find what works best for you. But if you find that what you're looking at is all priced around the same area, that's usually going to be a good thing in terms of the constants as well. And so here's what I want you to really kind of take away from today's episode, is that your equipment for your strength and conditioning facility or being a personal trainer is a tool, and tools should be evaluated by what they actually do and what you're going to use them for, not necessarily what they cost or what they look like on social media with Instagram and TikTok and famous people using them, right? The research on training adaptations we talked about is really what you're after when you're training people in the real world here. And the variables that matter are going to be your programming quality first, using progressive overload, common training systems here, consistency, and good high-level coaching. And then your equipment budget should serve those variables and then not actually be like a substitute for the lack of them, okay? So many times when I see like these decked out gyms or whatever, I wonder, what are the level of the coaching and whatever else is going there? Are they trying to acquire people from the, ooh, the new shiny object or whatever? Or are they focused on the coaching? And if you've ever seen the old picture of Thirst, the initial one that we opened with, bare bones, bare minimum, and I got people to come in that facility to train. And so that goes to show that equipment is important to a degree, right? We still had nice equipment. I still had stuff from Elite FTS, but I did not have all the bells and whistles. I had the bare minimum to get athletes and clients results. And you start stacking the results, and then you can start stacking on to other things on those tiers of equipment that we kind of talked about. And that segues me into this, is that building your tier one foundation of exercise equipment and specifications that you need is going to be most important. Squat, rack, your bench, your barbell, your plates, right? Those are all going to be the big bang for your bucks that you need to get out first. And then you want to fund your second tier that are going to enhance specific adaptations or specific populations that you're working with that are not necessarily things you have to have, but they would be really nice to have, and they can open up your program and they can open up some options. They can usually justify the purchases once you've kind of got the bare bones done. And then you want to approach that like third tier of equipment almost as a business decision with return on investment criteria attached to it, not as something as an aspiration that they want to have. So a really good example of this is that I love that back attack machine that Sornex made. I think Matt Winning makes one now. I love that piece of equipment. I think it's fantastic. It develops the upper back and the mid back incredibly strong, but I've never been able to justify purchasing it because, one, my gym doesn't stay open because of powerlifters, and it's a pretty powerlifting specific piece of equipment, for being honest, or a strength athlete. You know, I don't really see it having a whole lot of transfer over into me using it with my athletes, my clients. So why am I going to spend $4,000 to $5,000 on a piece of equipment that's really not going to fill a hole in my programming or what I do as a coach or as a facility owner? Now, if I had lots of powerlifters, let's say 100, 150 powerlifters, then I can justify spending it, right? Because if I got, let's say, 100 powerlifters at $60 a piece, that's $6,000 that I'm bringing in every month from those powerlifters. So very quickly, for a couple of months, I can easily justify that I've paid it off of that, whether they use it or not. You'd hope they would, but then you can justify it. But I don't sit in that situation, so I can't really justify it. But me having three safety squat bars, a lot of our athletes use them, a lot of our clients use them, a lot of our powerlifters use them, our strength athletes use them, our general population people use them, right? I use them. They are something that gets used at a very, very high volume. Same thing with Swiss bars or whatever. So it really comes down to return on investment when you're talking about the third tier of equipment that I brought up here earlier. And so you don't want to let the marketing convince you that you have to have these and they're going to make you more credible and they're helping your clients get more results, right? That's not really what matters. Figure out what your return on investment is going to be. And only you can really answer that depending on the clients that you work with. Now, I'd love to hear how this episode could potentially be helping you out, either make equipment decisions for your home gym, personal training, strength and conditioning facility, whatever that may be. And what equipment decisions did you struggle with? What did you like? What do you regret? I'd like to hear about that in the comment section down below over on YouTube. If you happen to be listening over on Spotify or Apple iTunes or whatever, you can leave those there. And then also, if you happen to have any questions, you can also leave those in the comments as well of the YouTube video this as well. Now, you can also hit me up over on Instagram at bsmitley. You can also shoot me an email at thirst.training@gmail.com. If you have any kind of like specific questions, if you're looking at something in particular, you want some feedback, I'm always more than happy to do this. I talk about this with my online clients. It seems like every couple months, somebody brings up, what do you think about this piece of equipment? Is this worth investing in? Is it worth the time? And so, you know, those are usually the questions that I ask is, you know, what are you trying to get out of it? You know, is it something that you're going to see yourself use or a lot or not? Like there's questions that have to come up. And I do feel that I answer those questions quite a bit, which is ultimately what drove this podcast episode to begin with. And lastly, if this episode gave you something to think about, I'd also really appreciate it if you can share it with a colleague, a friend, a training partner, somebody that might need to hear it or is looking for some equipment advice, that hopefully you can share this and pass it along to them. And that's really what I would like to see have happen, is just driving people in the right direction and helping answer them questions there. So that's all I got for today. Thanks for listening and tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast, and I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks for listening to the Thirst for More podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at The Smitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.